The GA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's harder to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show on a Monday. JJ is here in the studio and Damien is on the line. And I have to say hello to our YouTube viewers. So we're in a brand new studio today. So JJ is very impressed with it here. Damien, you can't see it. You're just on the line.
YouTube, Damien.
Welcome to YouTube there, Damien.
Thanks very much. Yeah. Welcome back.
We said hello to you just off air before we came on the show. And it was the most cheerful Damien Hayes we've heard on a Monday in a long time.
We had a great win yesterday, Colin. So we had, I knew that performance was coming, and I've said it to you all along, but I know yesterday was a great performance by Galway, so it was, and why wouldn't you be happy? We're after winning the Leinster final 2 years in a row. We beat Kilkenny and the weather is still good, and we saved Hay last week, so cheers, it's been a great couple of days.
You probably sold a couple of cars this morning as well, Damien, did you?
Absolutely, JJ. We've a few sold. You'll have to come down, JJ, and start putting your hand in your pocket.
Short hands and deep pockets, I have.
But JJ, it was almost the perfect way for Galway to beat Kilkenny, because their character was questioned. They responded to that, like, hammering Kilkenny while they might have liked it, you know, they kind of hammered them in a way and then showed character in a way, like, and then Kilkenny came back. So it's like almost nearly everyone in a weird way left hurless.
Kind of happy, all right. Yeah. No, it was absolutely brilliant. Brilliant game, number one. But Galway came out and hit him with absolutely everything for the first 20 minutes. And Kilkenny, who looked shell shocked, didn't know what to do or where to plug the gaps, because it was just, they're all over the field. Galway were all over him. And in fairness, Kilkenny did come back. They kind of got a lucky goal in the first half now and brought him straight back into it again. But I think TJ was absolutely brilliant in the first half, just to keep Kilkenny taking over, getting a couple of points and winning a bit of the ball. But only for him now, we would have been in trouble completely. But no, Galway were definitely the better team in the day. I like the response. It took a bit of criticism during the week. Probably the first time to criticise in probably a year to 18 months now at this stage, because they walked through the league and they walked through the championship last year as well. So they got that. They're big enough to take that on the chin, and they had a hell of a response there on Sunday.
Yeah. Gerlach Nan said on the TV, Damien, I don't know if you were watching that, and he kind of had a dig at Clare after the game, and he says there was no collapses here in Thurles. But, like, I mean, you could argue that Kilkenny collapsed at the start of that game.
Yeah, well, the first 20 minutes, Gaul were absolutely awesome. That's the only way to describe it. Their game plan was immense. You know, the two Galway midfielders, which people, I suppose, you know, we weren't in the game in midfield the last day, Johnny Cohen and David Burke, absolutely lorded, breaking ball, everything. But also, I suppose, I thought Kilkenny were a little bit naive in the sense that it looked from a game point of view that the Galway backs, right, when they were coming out with the ball, they were trying to offload to Johnny Cohen and David Burke continuously. And David Burke struck more ball in the first 20 minutes, I say, than he ever did in a hurling match before. And it was Ruth 1-14, which was to Johnny Glynn. So Galway made a big call then as well. So they put Johnny Glynn in on the edge of the square. So they did, and they dropped Conor Cooney, which I suppose I would have seen that one myself, you know, and Johnny Glynn caused off a problem, scored his goal, was breaking balls down, was offloading. As I said to you before on the show, he's a great man to lay off a pass, and he doesn't care who scores. He'd be a great team player. But the first 20 minutes of that game, Galway were just unbelievable, and I just thought at times Kilkenny were a little bit naive, were poking the ball long, so they were, and Galway were winning all the break. And then when Walter went off injured, really their only outlet was to TJ. So Kilkenny got a very, very lucky goal. It was definitely a free out at the end of the first half, but Galway had the intent, and Galway really, really pushed on. They put their stamp on the game early on.
Yeah. What about Aylward steps then, JJ? Because Kilkenny people said he was being fouled. So when you're getting fouled, you can take as many steps as you want. I counted 17. Yeah, 17 steps.
I can stop counting after 12, to be honest with you. You know, it was a free out, like, you know what I mean? But there's enough Galway players around Gerard now to kind of stop him getting near the goal. You're not kind of waiting. Skettle now, probably looking back on it, he'll probably, next time that happens, he'll stand up big rather than going on the ground for it. You know what I mean? Because Gerard got a great sidestep and he finished it well, Larry. But it was steps now, to be fair. Yeah. There's no point in saying any different.
No, it definitely was. And they kind of jeered.
The big score, Kilkenny needed that score.
Oh, yeah. There was 12, I think there was 12 in it at that stage. Yeah, so like, yeah, it was absolutely vital.
Respectable for half time.
But Scahill didn't cover himself in glory for that, Damien. He just kind of launched out feet first and made it.
Yeah, look at it. We, as I'm saying, is we're not here to criticise any players or you know, to start knocking them around. But no, he didn't. To be straight, James is a huge man. He's a massive puck out, so he has a great man to catch a ball with if it was going over the bar and all that. But yeah, he should have came out, and he'd be the first one to see it. You know, and there's no doubt about Micheál. I don't know who would be tackling him over, but he should have come out and miss Aylward and held him off. That's, you know, that's what he did. But he died. The ground. I don't know. It's like, I watched it obviously live, but I came home and watched that Sunday game. Jeez, it looked terrible in the Sunday game. You know, he just dived to the ground. So, and he didn't. No, he didn't. He'd be disappointed in that aspect of his game, that he should have held him up. Yeah. He should have held him up, definitely.
Would Murphy be disappointed with Johnny Glynn goal, JJ? Are we being too harsh on him?
Yeah,
like,
I'd say just with the standards of Murphy's after sitting over the last couple of years, you probably would be saying...
It was a good height for him, wasn't
it? Yeah, you expect him to stop. He got his hurl to it. Anytime Owen gets his hurl to it, he usually does stop, in fairness to him. But in the second half, he made an absolute brilliant save off of, I think it was Jason Flynn, near the end as well. That was an absolute rocket as well. So look, he can't criticise Owen too much. Like, over the last couple of years, probably Kilkenny's most consistent player as well. Only for him, we'd got hammered in a lot of games. But no, he probably would be disappointed himself. No more than James. Any goal that goes in, the goalkeeper will take a bit of hurt from that, you know what I mean? But when they actually get the hurl to it, he'll be upset over that, I think. Yeah.
What's Jason Flynn's story?
The Johnny Glynn goal was a big score at that particular time. Yeah. It really pushed Galway. You know, he would be disappointed he didn't save it, but it was a big score at that time. You know, even if Galway didn't get that goal, it would have only been 3 points to one. And next thing, it was 1-3 to a point. And next thing, Galway pushed on a little bit, so it was a huge score at that period of the game.
It was a big score for Johnny Glynn to get it as well. It was huge for Galway. They obviously seen what Páraic Welsh done in the first match.
Yeah.
Caught a lot of ball. Then put in Johnny Glynn on probably Kilkenny's best player of last week. And Johnny Glynn, just for him to score that goal, Micheál Donoghue must have been very, very happy to bringing in Donoghue and scoring the goal as well.
He did more than just score the goal. We'll talk about that in part two. Like, I mean, he caused havoc there for about 5 minutes in the first half. What did you think of Derek McGrath in the Sunday game, JJ? Were we watching the Sunday game?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
I thought he was very good. But I thought what he did was... We were being slated for being an offensive team, so he made sure to show how many Galway players were back, because Kilkenny are doing that and Galway are doing that. They're all doing it, and they're leaving space for three men up front, and they're getting it up to them. So his analysis was good, because to be honest, I'm critical of the Sunday game pundits in that they generally just narrate over scores. Yeah. Like, that's the analysis they'll get. Well, then Galway came back and here's Joe Canning popping it over the bar, and you know, this kind of thing. So he actually showed David Burke being preoccupied with TJ Reid. I would have liked to have seen a few more examples of that rather than just one. But, like, I mean, he was clearly trying to show some analysis, which, like, I mean, it's an analysis show, so we shouldn't be so shocked about it.
Yeah, he was kind of justifying, I suppose, the way Waterford played over the last couple of years and trying to show everyone that every team plays the exact same way. When we were going well, Owen Larkin used to play on my wing. I used to be on left half back. Owen Larkin was in wing form. He was always between me and Jackie. Jackie was always cornerback behind me. He was always sweeping in around there and coming back, but then he'd get back up the field again. It's not a full time sweeper,
but
he comes back and help out. That's what the guys were doing yesterday. Cottle Mannion was going deep to get the ball. Joseph Cooney, which does a lot of work, he goes deep to get the ball there as well. David Burke sits back there as well. They all kind of filter back and they kind of cut off the space. It makes complete sense what he did say, and he just pointed out that every team is doing it. He got criticised over the last 2 or 3 years for doing it, but every team is doing it. He just wanted to make that point.
I think he did. I suppose the obviously difference with Derek McGrath was that maybe he might only leave one forward up there, which he was a bit more of an extreme version of what everyone else is doing, Damien.
Yeah, well, I think Derek was very, very defensive, but as you showed there last night on the Sunday game, the comparison between last and the Sunday previous was that Galway were extremely defensive, so they were. But Burke was really concentrating on TJ because he knew he was their danger man. And there were maybe even only one up in the full forward line, Galway, and maybe two. But the last day, Galway went with three in the full forward line, and they had three great players inside. And with Johnny Glynn at full forward, Johnny Glynn is a real crowd keeper. I think the Galway people love Danny Glynn. He do, and each side of him, the corner forwards with Whelan and Mannion, he's like a 2 points for 10 points playing between them in the corners, which is just unbelievable scores. And then you had Johnny Glynn, who scored 1-1, and how many assists did he make? So yeah, but I think a lot of teams are playing that way, right? What's happening is the ball is poked out by the opposition, and then the two half forwards run back and they give a hand, and the midfielders drop and everything. And then it's a case of, do the wing backs follow or they hold their position? Now, I often say that I think the wing backs should follow, right? Because sometimes their man can get a ball and hit the ball at 45 degree angle across the ball, and next thing they get a score, and where if they're being marked, would they do this? But then it's all about the space, and JJ will go on about condensing the space and that sort of stuff. So pros and cons to it, but yeah, they're all at, everyone is at now at the moment, dropping their players back to crowd the middle eight.
Yeah, exactly, and we can thank Kilkenny, who don't do tactics for all of this. Well, talk about the Joe McDonagh Cup finalists, lads, because they were asked to play 6 days later, and JJ, that's just not right on them. Like, I mean, I was reading Micheál Donoghue talking after the Leinster final there, and he says the biggest advantage is that we have a couple of weeks to regroup and refocus and go again. He said, look, it's really hard and people mightn't comprehend how hard it is to turn around in 7 days.
Yeah.
So these fellas are being asked to win a final, some of them, and turn it around in 6 days. Like, yeah. So this kind of thing, while it might look good on paper, oh, they can come back in and play the third place in the groups, in the provincials. If you're just going to give them 6 days, you're like, it's tough enough as it is. Yeah. There's a huge gap, but that's just not fair.
But again, I suppose this is the first year of this whole thing as well, and we're talking about the provincial league, Munster League and Leinster League, and that will be tweaked. So you'll be hoping this time next year this is going to be tweaked as well, because it's not fair. You see what happened, Carlow, Limerick hammered Carlow, and they were after winning it. I suppose Westmead was easier for Westmead to actually gather the troops there again. We don't want to finish on Carlow beating us, so we want to put up a performance against Wexford. Yeah. That was their motivation going into the game, whereas Carlow was coming down from Mohai celebrating for Sunday night, maybe Monday, I'm not sure, and then, and rightly so, they should be celebrating.
Yeah, should be allowed the Monday, like,
100%
I mean.
They should be doing it, but then trying to get back in the horse then and go out and play the Limerick team that just want to get into the quarter final, you know. So it is tricky, but you'd be hoping now, looking from the outside in, come winter time there as well, they'll have a look at it again and they'll address it and have to give them 2 weeks.
Yeah, and Damien, like, I mean, these results, getting a hammering, like especially Carlow did against Limerick, you go from having such a brilliant year, which Carlow have had in the league and the Joe McDonagh Cup, and then, you know, you get hammered. I saw their manager Colin Bonner say, we would have had a bit more comfort if we had been a bit closer to Limerick, and say we're not that far away. So now in Carlow's kind of minds, after getting an awful scutching like that, they're thinking, are we anywhere near this level now to be moving up to?
Yeah, and it was difficult because they were after having an unbelievable win to the war in the Joe McDonagh Cup, and then I suppose you'd question, you know, did they celebrate a bit or whatever, and if they did, fair play to them, and they were well entitled to it because they're after having an unbelievable year. But then they had to go out 6 days later and play a Limerick team that have a pint to prove, they're on the rise, they're on up and coming, and maybe have sights on maybe getting to an All-Ireland semi-final, maybe disappointed that they didn't get to a Munster final, and then getting a hockeying and a trimming like that. And I suppose Conal Bonner, then I suppose he even said it on the Sunday game, that maybe they were a bit naive in their tactics, maybe they should have played maybe a bit of a sweeper at the start just to see how they were getting on, but he wanted to see at what stage they were. But you'd actually feel sorry for them. But look, at they have made huge progress, they're now in Division 1B next year, and they're in the Leinster Championship next year, and they had a great season. So look, at there is a bit of depth in Gulf and Class of Limerick versus them, but look, at that's what they have to get into, to try strive to get to that level. So look, at best luck Carlow next year.
Yeah, definitely. And Westmead put in arguably a better performance. Well, they got closer to Wexford anyways, which we could nearly predict. Wexford aren't going to run up the same score as kind of Limerick. Maybe it's the way they play or whatever. But Michael Ryan stepped down, JJ, and it's four years there. It's difficult to know how to look back on Michael Ryan, because they flattered to deceive at their own level. But then they beat Offaly and they beat Laois and they nearly beat Tip last year in the championship. So they've had some brilliant performances, but never got out of the level which they really were favourites nearly every year he was there to do it.
The unfortunate thing, he'll probably be judged off that then as well. But I'd say for the players now, and I met him a few times down in Waterford as well, and he's living down outside Dungarvan, and the commute he has every day, you know, he's just infectious. And he was saying that nights off, he's training, he's involved in the St Mary's Tom Mell team as well, hurling team as well. So whatever time he has he off, he goes back into a club team as well. So I've no doubt about that, we will see him again at some time. Maybe as a Waterford manager, you never know, he might throw his name into the hat for that then as well. So you wouldn't know his previous fan that then as well. So
48 hours a week, I was reading, Damien, in the car, he does 48 hours per week. So he said in his statement when he was retiring, he said, it's a sad day, today is my 501st trip to Mullingar. Like, I mean, I wonder, is he getting paid by the trip, or is
is
that the way it works? Michael Ryan is salt of the earth. I would imagine he's might be accusing him in completely in the wrong of getting payments. But like, I mean, 501 trips to Mullingar from Waterford, 48 hours a week. I mean, it's some commitment, and he's an absolute gentleman.
Oh yeah, and I met him a couple of times. We played. He was over a Railway Cup team, so he was 1 year when we'll say Connacht played Munster up in Croke Park. So it was actually one of the first games under lights. It was the year that Dan Shannon was hurler of the year, and he was over that team. And I actually got speaking to him after the match, and as you said, an absolute gentleman. So but it just shows you he loved hurling, you know, and he was over Waterford, and I suppose got the exit fairly quick, and he took over Westmead, and he has improved. I mean, in fairness to us, Westmead got some unbelievable scores yesterday, but I suppose it's like that, it's all about the time and the amount of time and hours he's put into it, and he's probably tired now as well at this stage of that drive, and he probably needs a new challenge. So, but I'd say he has no regrets, but I think he has improved Westmead hurling, my own opinion, even though they didn't win anything or win any silverware, but I think he's done his bit down there, and fair play to him, a great hurling man, and loves his hurling, and speaks always fierce well on the Sunday game, even when they get beaten. I always felt he came across very gracious and very well spoken and all that. So, and the players taught an awful lot of him, so, you know, fair play to Michael Ryan, so, and best luck to him.
Yeah, and he's a great hurling man, but he's a football man as well. Like, he was a footballer when he was playing. We interviewed him on the show here. He's actually a gas man.
Yeah.
So I had him on the show and did a really good interview because he's really honest and everything. And now he sends me a few joke texts every now and then.
He's in contact.
Yeah, he'll send me a meme or a funny video or something. Yeah. So I just send him back. Brilliant. I just send him back smiley faces. So we have a little
banter
going on.
You might get a few more of them now. He's plenty more time these times now. So you might get a few more.
Every now and then, just randomly. And now Damien Hayes sends me loads of these funny texts. But every now and then I'll get Michael Ryan texting, and I'm just laughing at the good of him sending me on a message.
That's brilliant.
But
he probably does that with the players from Westmead as well.
Yeah.
You know, and how many managers out there would maybe send a player a funny message or a funny video? You know, and you know what? He probably has great old camaraderie down there within the players and everything. But look at, he's a little bit different, and he's infectious, and he's highly entertaining, and he's great energy about him. So, like, I'd like to say fair play to him.
Yeah, very, very likeable. Very, very likeable man. You'd love to see him getting another
and
job.
And he's a great old accent. He's a great old accent on him as well. I don't think I've ever seen him do an interview without the hat.
No, but that's true as well. Yeah, Cheddar used to wear the hat a lot as well. Yeah, the woolly hat. Come here, we're finishing on a lighter note here, lads, because Babs Keating has been in the media again. So he's writing in his column in the Sun, I think it is, and he's given out about Johnny Glynn. So Johnny Glynn wears a glove on either hand.
Mm.
So Babs says, "I don't know any hurler worth his salt who wouldn't sacrifice a rap on the hand to play in a Leinster final. It's unforgivable that the biggest and strongest fella on the pitch, 6'4" and nearly 16 stone, had to wear them on both hands. Gloves are a handicap in hurling, no question about it. And if I was Donoghue giving him a jersey, I'd have a serious chat about it first." Now, I doubt Babs would say this to Johnny Glynn's face. But talk to me about a glove and hurling, JJ, because I'm always interested in this kind of thing. We've talked about loads of stuff which are hurling and all different things like that. Are they useless? Why is he wearing one on both hands? That's unusual.
I suppose, look, it's come from experience. He got belts on both hands when he went up catching the ball himself. But if you look at TJ Reid, he wears a glove there as well on one hand, and he's catching hand. And look, he's one of the best catcher of all as well. And it's very, very hard. I'd say Johnny's so big as well that he goes up without the hurl another time there as well. He's holding off guy with the hurl, and maybe as a forward, another back might come in and pull on the hand or something like that as well. So he's wearing it for a reason. He could have broken the hand before or both of them before. I'm not sure. But he's probably a lot more comfortable putting the hand up in the air without protecting it with the glove on it, because he obviously he'd done it before and someone took the hand off him before, so he's obviously just more comfortable using it. Like, some people, you need to take a bit of time to in introducing the glove already. You can't just go out and play a match with it. You need you need around 6 or 8 months to get used to, because of the feel of the ball in your hand there with the glove as well. But once you get used to it, a teacher's been wearing it for years and there hasn't been any issue with it at all. But I don't understand where Babs is coming from, really, to be honest with you. I'd say he was just stuck for something to write in the paper now, and he came up, he's seen Johnny Glynn with two gloves on. Just that, Lou,
that would be very unlike bad. Very unlike
controversy here
now.
Again.
Damien, do you have any insight into Johnny Glynn's hands?
The only thing I would say to Babs is, you know, he wrote that and he made a comment, you know, and maybe he should do a little bit more research into stuff before he writes it. Like, and I'll give you an example. People say, like, why is Johnny Glynn wearing gloves on his two hands, right? And you take, for example, my own brother. My own brother broke his knuckle hurling one day, you know, and his knuckle is actually in the centre of his hand. So it is. So, like, for example, there's reasons why lads wear gloves. And, like, Johnny Glynn's strongest part of his game is that he's catching ability like this. And you take, he's probably going up catching balls and maybe he damaged a knuckle. Maybe he has broken bones in the actual part of his hand. And he, you know, so these are the reasons why the likes. But anyways, question Johnny Glynn on whether why he wears gloves and he get Micheál Dunne to maybe have a chat with him. I think Johnny Glynn has had the last laugh there, being honest. And but like Johnny Glynn was, the first 20 minutes of the Leinster final yesterday was all set the tone was by Johnny Glynn. As I said, maybe he broke a knuckle one time, or maybe he broke a bone in one of his hands or whatever, you know. And maybe, as the man says, he wears gloves, and why not? As I said, Johnny Glynn has had the last laugh, and I know Johnny Glynn personally, and Johnny Glynn is a lovely fella. He's the salt of the earth, he's as sound as man as you'd meet, he's a hard man, he's a tough man, and he'd do anything for you. So, but as I said, maybe Babs had something behind it, but I think Johnny Glynn has had the last laugh today.
Yeah. And would they have been around in Babs' time? When did it come into the
They wouldn't have. Probably the 90s. Remember DJ used to wear
DJ wore one, yeah.
Yeah, he wore a couple, but they're gone since there. They're after going on leaps and bounds. Micros on there, you barely feel it on your hand now.
Right.
Like, you know,
and did you try them?
Tried it once or twice.
Didn't like it. Did you try them, Damien?
No, I put on a glove, all right, but see, your fingers go into four little loops.
Right.
You know, to keep the glove on, and the little, they're around your fingers, so it's a completely different feeling, you know. But Banners, what would I need it for? I never caught a ball in the air.
Well, that's true.
I wouldn't need it, and as simple as that.
You'd have wanted shin pads. Did you wear it for shin pads? Who used to wear? Did you? You didn't wear shin pads, did you? What hurler wore shin pads?
DJ again.
DJ
Keary.
Jeez, so you weren't getting a clatter at DJ at all, were you?
He's protected.
Wasn't he? Like, shin pads in GAA should be banned. Like, I mean, It's just not right. Like,
no, it doesn't look.
We're
right.
Hardier than that, right?
But if you think about it, it makes sense to wear the shin pads
in hurling, definitely.
But,
yeah,
like, no one does it because it's not the done thing. You know,
no,
like,
no, shin pads are definitely no, Damien.
No, my shin. I would agree, Jay. I don't know why you hurlers don't wear shin pads, because my shins are absolutely destroyed with little marks all over them. But it makes sense. But I'm trying to think: is there any current hurler that wears shin pads? And I can't think of anyone. So, but I think DJ could have been one of the last to wear shin guards. But it does make sense. But sure, us hurlers, we think we're tough, so we don't need them.
Yeah, all DJ was missing was the bubble wrap all around. All right, we'll be back in a second, and we'll look back at the match yesterday.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat a heap of shite like him, and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in there. I don't know, it was pure luck, no, in fairness. Pure luck. It's fucking bullshit, as you see yourselves.
Yeah, lads, so the reaction, I suppose, the big thing for Galway yesterday was the reaction to Richie Hogan's goal, which only put one in it. And for all the world, it looked like Kilkenny could be pulling off a miracle here. And what Galway ended up doing was finishing out the game 8-2. So all the big men stood up. Canning, Hart, Cooney, Mannion, who was brilliant the whole way through the game, and Jason Flynn as well, who I think is, how that lad's not getting more game time, I just don't understand. But psychologically, JJ, like, even though Galway are All-Ireland champions, that's a huge thing for them. Even Joe Canning said after the game, he actually referenced it as well.
But sure, it's huge. You take the first 20 minutes to what they were 1-8, 1-9 to 1 point, and then the last 10 minutes they were 8-2. The two most vital parts of the actual game, Galway won it hands down. And they started very, very strongly, but they finished very, very strongly as well. Like, if you take their starting six forwards scored 118 from play. Kilkenny starting six forwards scored 1-3 from play. the Colin Finlay scored 1-1 and Richie Hogan scored 1-1 and they came on. Apart from that, then it was very, very last. That was just the story of the game, the six forwards. But I'm very impressed with Galway forwarding, not alone they're moving, but it wasn't when I got the ball, if I have a 60-40 chance, I'll take a shot at the goal. They didn't. They actually passed the ball to the guy in a better position. Whereas you couldn't always say that, like last Sunday, in a draw match, they weren't doing that. But they had it in their head, it doesn't matter who score, we'll get the scores on the board then, and we'll roll in behind it again, like, you know. So Cottle Mannion was absolutely brilliant, but a lot of lads done a lot of work so Cottle Mannion could take them shots at the goal, like, you know. So it was just a team effort, now, to be fair, like, you know. And they had their tactics for the first 20 minutes, they had their tactics 100% spot on. David Burke was sitting back, he was getting the ball off the half-back line. Garrod McNairy didn't even want to hit the ball, he was just coming out with the ball, hand pass it, David Burke would hit 60 yards, and it went long just to Johnny Lynn, the long and height just into him. But they were pinging ball, Johnny Coleman pinging ball into their corners to Conor Whelan and Cottle Mannion as well. So they're actually playing to their strengths. They knew they had the out ball of Johnny Glynn, and especially after the first few minutes when they seen it working, they got a goal from it then, and that just brought a huge amount of confidence throughout the team.
So how, Damien, did they get so dominant in midfield? Like, I mean, Conor Fogarty and James Maher, like, I mean, if David Burke is dropping deep and the Galway half back line are dominant in the air and they're just passing it to him, why is Fogarty and Maher watching this happen without pushing up on David Burke?
I would have to agree with you, Colm. I was watching the match and I said the exact same thing. Like, Johnny Cohen and David Burke were getting on to break, snapping the ball, and as I said, McInerney and the boys, you know, John Hansbury as well, were coming out with ball, and the boys were the outlet ball. In particular, David Burke was the outlet ball for a quick hand pass or a quick strike pass, and David Burke was just getting the ball and on the half turn whipping it straight into the full forward. And Johnny Glynn, even if he didn't win it, they had a game plan in that Johnny Glynn even just batted it down, and there was a prime example that Johnny Glynn jumped up ball with Porrig Walsh, and he just flicked the ball down straight onto Whelan into the hand over the bar, right? But as I said, I think maybe the Kilkenny management were a little bit naive that they didn't pick up on this, because if they did pick up on, for example, Fogarty just went up and he just man-marked even David Burke for, we'll say, the Kilkenny puck outs, right, or whatever, that outlet ball would have been gone. So next thing Galway would have to, but the big difference between the two games, Colin, was I think Kilkenny put Galway on the back foot from the half forward line onwards. Like this, you know, you didn't see Porrig Mannion half as dominant or Aidan Hart as yesterday at the Warren Crow Park, and David Burke and Johnny Cohen weren't half as dominant. And next thing, all of a sudden, these five pairs, including Garrod McInerney, were on top for the first 20 minutes alone. It was just unbelievable. So I think Galway or Kilkenny were very naive in that. And then in the second half, they pushed up on these players, and they didn't have as much outlet ball, and they brought in the likes of Richie Hogan and they brought in the likes of Colin Finlay, which helped the situation. But the first 20 minutes, I think Kilkenny were a little bit naive, and I also spoke about them poking the long ball down on top of this half back line stroke midfield were so on top, and then Walter went off, so really all you had was TJ. So maybe they should have went a little bit short, but that was the reason. The boys had a game plan, Galway, and they stuck to it, and it was perfect. Even they were pulling the half forward line back out, which was an example. Colin Mannion happened to be in the half forward line in the first few minutes, and he got a long range score and he wasn't even being picked up. So I think the first 20 minutes Kilkenny were naive.
Yeah, and Buckley was all over the place as well, because he was holding centre back. Joe Canning was drifting. Jeez, like, Joe Canning's just popping up and nobody's on him.
Yeah.
Do you know,
yeah.
Like, I mean, that's kind of, like, I know Buckley played so well the last time, but maybe when Johnny Glynn's in there, Moore was coming off those balls, yeah, and Buckley wasn't getting any breaks. The breaks were kind of breaking away from him.
Yeah, in fairness, we mentioned James Kettle's puckouts last week in the drawing game that were going long, long, long all the time, but he was actually picking out guys in one on one. Joseph Cooney was one on one with Enda Morrissey for a lot of puckouts. No, he wasn't winning every single one of them, but they were breaking, and then you see, like, Joe and all these guys coming onto the break as well, so they actually seen that themselves, so they actually tweaked that as well.
Yeah.
Telling James, you don't have to go as long, because you go long, it's going to loop on top of the back. But he was actually pinging him, so actually, if no one touched the ball, it would have bounced into the full forward line anyway. You know what I mean? So they actually learned from a lot from the drawing game as well, which, look, the better team always does learn a lot from it. You know what I mean? And they came out of traps absolutely flying. You know, so look, a great response from this Galway team. But just a touch on Johnny Glynn. What I like as him as a full forward, he actually situates himself at the 14 yard line. a lot of full forwards, and you see them up now in the country, seeing club games, they always stand at the 21 yard line. If you run out for the ball, you get the ball, you're 30 yards out from the goal. But if he's at 14, he makes a run out towards the ball, he'll get at the 21, and he's strong enough to take on the guy then as well, like, you know. So it was just when that ball breaks in around the 14 yard box, it does cause a lot of havoc in the full back line there as well.
Yeah.
And it could break anywhere. And you've seen with Richie Hogan, he pulled the ball straight in the goal, straight on the ground. If you were 30 yards out, you can't do that. But he situates himself right in the half, right in front of the keeper as well, so there's no loose ball goes into the keeper either. So he does a vital. And then you'll see probably Conor Whelan at the 21, and then another 5 yards out, then Cottle Mannion. So
yeah,
they're in the space, and then they go to the sides as well. Like, you know, what a lot of teams are doing this year as well.
The two boys' movement was good, but one of them was making sure that they were around Glynn, because I was reading here, and you could see it in the match, between the 12th and the 15th minute, Glynn scored the opening goal, touched the ball down for Conor Whelan point, made another point for Cottle Mannion, and scored another point himself. Like, yeah. I mean, so that's some kind of return from a target man. And then it was 1-7 to a point up, and yeah, this is all Johnny Glynn. Like, it almost makes the decision not to play him in Croke Park even worse, and we were critical of that. Like, why this man is so effective, Damien?
Yeah, but sure, I suppose it's like getting Colm. They discovered how important he is of a player, and you know, Johnny can be left in there for a while, and basically they can also bring him out into the half forward line as well. And I've said it before, I think Johnny Glynn's a huge target man, and he's a great man to catch a ball. He's now not afraid to take scores. Like, one time he was nearly afraid to take a shot, but he had no problem taking the shot for his goal and his point. But also he's laying off the ball, and he's a huge team player, and he's big into the, you know, giving the offload ball and giving the assists and everything. But just, you just said there a minute ago, Colm, about, you know, what was different between this week and last week. The long and short of it, I'd say Micheál Donu went bananas with that team, so he did during the week. I'd say there was a couple of home truths said. I'd say there was an awful lot of video analysis done. I'd say there was an awful lot of errors shown to players, what they could have done better and what they didn't do better. And the big thing is the work rate of the Galway team in comparison to 7 days previous was just unbelievable. Their work rate was upped, I'd say 200%. Every one of them players, and even you've seen Conor Cooney coming on the pitch, maybe was surprised to be dropped, maybe disappointed, right? But you could see his intent in his work rate even when he came on, you know. And that you're saying maybe about Cottle Mannion, how come this player, so they're telling me that maybe his work rate isn't as good as other players up front, and it's one of the main reasons that he's not getting on the team from
Jason
the very
Flynn.
Start.
Jason but, Flynn, is it?
Or Jason Flynn, you know. But that was the big difference between the two Sundays. The Galway's work rate was unbelievable yesterday in Turles, and they outworked and they outplayed Kilkenny in particular in that first 20 minutes. And as Brian Cody said himself in his interview, he says after that, he says Kilkenny left himself a mountain to climb. Now, they got back so much, but geez, they probably just couldn't sustain it, and Galway just pushed on again, but they left themselves with a mountain to climb.
Did you think you had it, JJ, when you got it back to a point? That Richie Hogan goal.
Yeah, kind of brought it back into it again, like, you know, and they were going well, to be fair to Murray, but you were kind of waiting for a team gets on top for a period of time, and then it's the other team's kind of turn to come back on top again, so you're waiting for Galway to come back and with the, because it was very very loose at our back line, and we were frantic now to get the ball up the field and get another score. And I think after we went point down, we missed four scorable chances there as well.
Fogarty had the Hawkeye away. One go against
yeah,
him, didn't he?
Yeah, Richie Hogan a couple of chances there as well. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? So if a couple of them went out, if you got a point ahead, you never know what happened. But then again,
yeah, and you missed a good few. You missed a good few scores as well on the right hand side,
yeah,
of the pitch in the first half. A few of them went across the goals. I think it was three in a row.
Yeah,
when you really needed them.
Had a chance in the first half as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it goes, you're talking about character. That's when the big player stood up for Galway again, like, you know, and no one showed responsibility. Everyone was looking for the puck out, everyone wanted the puck out, everyone wanted to take a shot at the goal as well. And fairness to Galway, just steamrolled home again.
Yeah. So where are they at then, JJ? Like, I mean, you gave us that stat of 1-3 from the starting forwards, and they've been chopping young fellas, older fellas, young fellas, older fellas. So, like, I mean, it's hard to know where Kilkenny are at now. Yeah. Richie Hogan, to me, very obvious, you put him centre forward, that's his best position, and he can do what Joe Canning does the other side. Do you leave him off? You can't leave him off because he's too bloody good, or you know, and you have all that conundrum of such a clever player like Richie. But then you're back to Richie and Colin Fennelly, which people thought last week we're moving away from them. Like it seems like so up in the air with
Kilkenny.
Yeah,
I don't think we're ever going to move away from these guys. These guys have a vital experience and they need to come on. If they don't start, they're definitely going to come on every game. Colin Finlay, I thought that would have been the right guy for Dottie Burke when he went on to him. He's physically strong and he's very, very quick as well.
He's gone huge though, isn't he?
He's gone massive, yeah. Seen him, met him there over the weekend. He's absolutely huge.
He was
in the army.
What was he doing out there?
He was in the army there for the last 6 months there, so.
He's on the bull nuts. he's on the bull nuts there. He's prime beef.
Yeah. Well, I'd say Dottie Burke likes a bull nut himself.
Two bull nuts going out of there, aren't they? But I thought when you went into him, he just kind of curved. Dottie couldn't really go attack the ball because you knew Colin was so quick there as well. Yeah. So he has to start. But if they do start Richie Hogan, they're going to have to start playing the ball low into him because he'll go deep. And if when they're playing Limerick, Declan Hannan likes to sit in the hole as well.
He'll get a free roll against Declan Hannan.
If he is going to play him, they're going to have to play him sharp ball into him. There's no point in lumping high ball and making Declan Hannan look like a hero. So they're going to have to, if they're going to side in, they're going to have to play him there.
Colin, it's like this. Kilkenny have played, is it five games now in the championship so far? Is it five or six? I think it's five.
Yeah, go on. Let me think while you're talking.
Yeah, they've played five, right? They've now put in young players, old players. They've chopped, they've switched, they've taken off lads and everything. They're now playing Limerick next Sunday. I know well, and JJ will tell you that this week will all be about recovery. Simple as that, all recovery. I expect Kilkenny to do very little because they're after playing two very, very difficult games in the last 2 weeks, right? Cody should now know why his best team is. It's as simple as that. He should know the players that he wants to go with, right? And you're on about Colin Finlay. Will he start and will Richie Hogan start? These players, I think, have to start. He has to put out his strongest team from here on in, so there's no safety net anymore. And I think these players need maybe a little bit of game time, need a few minutes here and there to get their sharpness like this. And I expect to see Colin Finlay and Richie Hogan and all these lads playing from here on in. And there's no reason why Kilkenny can't beat Limerick if they can keep fresh. 3 weeks in a row is a lot. We know that playing in championship hurling like that. But Kilkenny, Cody should know at this stage now what his strongest 15 is and what his best 15, and he has to start playing them from the start off. Simple as that.
Yeah. There's an important point on that there as well. Brian Cody will probably know his best team, but John Kiely won't know Kilkenny's best team, for argument's sake, because you couldn't pick the first 15 that's going to come out. Now, fair enough, Brian probably does know after yesterday, he would know, but how does John Kiely kind of cater? Do I cater for Richie Hogan centre forward? He'd never started it this year. Would sit for Colin Finlay full forward or corner forward? There's a lot of questions there that Limerick will have to answer there as well, so which will be a positive for
the
end.
And JJ, what happened to Walter?
I think he hurt his groin.
What happened to Walter? Is he out, do you think? Or?
He hurt his groin now, so
he'll be gone. If he hurt his groin and he has to leave a championship game, it's not getting better in 6 days,
and we're in trouble at the time.
Yeah.
They would have kept him on, and he won a couple of balls in the air there as well, so they would have tried and kept him on as much as possible as well. But Kilkenny did play that game with probably a majority of that game without Walter as well, but then in the first half, when you seen TJ was kind of up there on his own, Walter wasn't there, he was there on his own. But then when you seen Richie and Colin coming on, add a bit more physique there as well, and a bit more menace there as well.
Another quick one, was it that terrible defending from Dottie Burke for the Colin Finlay goal? Instead of trying to get that out of danger zone, he messed with that.
He was a bit unlucky now. He just reacted straight away. Like, he hit the post, he's getting a hit, and then went over and it broke between the two of them. Now, I'd say going back again, he'd probably flick it away, but did he see Colin was so close to him? I don't know. Or did he thought, as a
fullback in that area, you should probably know you don't have much time if you're trying
to get out there as much as you can, you know what I mean? But then he was probably trying to control the ball as well. But Colin does a lot, he's brilliant at tackler, he's an absolute brilliant tackler when he doesn't have the ball. When you're trying to get up, get in your hand, he always gets a hurling, flicks it away, and gets a hook and a block. So something like that actually suits him down to the ground as well. Like he's so accurate, he's so quick and so strong. He was in there on top of it very, very quickly, in fairness to him.
Right, okay. I don't have the stats on the aerial duels, Damien, but last week Kilkenny won them. I would be very surprised if Kilkenny won them this week. Like, some of the fielding from the Galway defenders, high ball is not the right ball for these lads.
No, but as I said to you, the Galway won an awful lot of battles, so they did. I think they probably won nearly every one of the battles in the first 20 minutes in particular. The only player that was causing Galway any problems was TJ Reid, and as I said, Galway upped their work rate, they upped their manliness. I think they might have been slightly bullied the last day, but Galway just got on top. They had a game plan, they stuck to the game plan. That goal that Johnny Glynn scored was a big score at that particular time in the game, and Galway pushed on. they left Kilkenny with a mountain to climb if they wanted to catch them. Then when Kilkenny did catch them, they just couldn't keep it going. They were after putting in a massive 20 minutes there, 25 minutes in the second half, trying to get themselves back in the game. Micheál Dunne wouldn't be one bit happy with the Galway team with the way they let Kilkenny back in. So now he has a stick to hit them with again to keep their feet on the ground. So he has, we conceded three goals, Galway did, which he will be absolutely bullying with. Simple as that. And three of them possibly shouldn't have gone in at all. There were three narrow mistakes. And aerial battle, Galway won an awful lot of aerial battle, as JJ just alluded to. Scale didn't poke as long this time. He went basically for aerial zones and tried pinpoint men, which was probably the right thing to do. But I think Galway won most of the battles in this. I was expecting a big performance for Galway, and we got. But Micheál Dunne will be extremely disappointed at Galway let Kilkenny back into this game and brought, let them back into it in the centre. They were back to 1 point at one stage. Okay, Galway pushed on and all that, but he'd be very disappointed in that, and he has something to work on, and that's what he would like to.
That's the thing, JJ. That's nearly how it's almost the perfect win for Galway, in that they showed that they're a lot better than Kilkenny. Then they let Kilkenny back into it. Now they have motivation for the next time. Yeah. Then their shirt leader stood up.
Like that. Yeah,
so they probably will use that now in the next few 100%. Weeks.
Yeah, 100%. They'll be looking at it again now next weekend to see who comes out in the draw, who they're going to get, and then they can refocus on Water. But look, was it a perfect performance? It wasn't. It was a perfect performance for the first 20 minutes and probably the last 10 minutes. But in between, they have a lot to work on there as well, which is an unbelievable thing for Micheál Dunne to come back in, and he can pinpoint, have a chat with a couple of players. You should have done this and this within that period. We need to, if we do that in semi-final, we're going to be blown out and we're knocked out of the championship. There's no more plan B anymore. You're knockout for now on, whereas always before, now you're in the Munster League, Leinster League, you've always game next week. After this, now it's just knockout for now on. So that's when the true kind of character comes to the fore there as well.
Yeah, isn't it gas too, Damien, just to finish up on this, and all the tactics we talk about here and all the you know, the different little nuances to the tactics now, is that the best team in the country, Galway, dominate the puck out and get it in long to a target man and have two scoring corner forwards. Like, it's almost back to
I've always loved that tactic, and I won't lie to you, and there's no science to it, if you know. And this is my own opinion: by all means, play the ball through the lines and stick pass and get the ball to a man, and I'm all for that. And it's heads up hurling, it's vision hurling, and it's hitting the ball through. But my own opinion is, if you're in doubt with a ball, or you're controlling the ball and your back is to the goals, and maybe your lap coming on top of you, right, my own opinion is, hit the ball route 1 to 14, have your full forward in there, and have your two corner forwards running in and breaking off them. And that has always been something that I've always said. If you're in doubt, just hit the ball route 1 to 14. And if their 14 doesn't catch it, ask them to try break it. And you try coach it, or you try teach it. One corner forward, if he's running, he might run on the inside, and the other corner forward runs on the outside. Like that. So if the ball breaks, that hopefully if it breaks inside, you have one lad running that way, or if it breaks on the other side. But it's such a simple tactic, Colin. It's not complicated. If you get the ball and you're under pressure, just hit the ball route 1 into 14. There should be someone in there at all times. Okay, sometimes it will happen and there'll be no one in full forward, and you're the worst lad in the world for hitting the ball and you never looked. But it's such a simple tactic. And when you have a big man like Johnny Glynn that's willing to put up his hand, that's the first thing. JJ said then the second thing is willing to stay in there on the 6-yard box, be patient, right? And the third thing, if he wins it, that you know that he's going to give it, and he's also able to take his own score. So it's such a simple tactic, but it can be so effective. And like, how many times did Kilkenny do it over the years? When they were in trouble, they used to throw Henry Sheffield in full forward. They had Martin Comfort. Yeah. They used to often put in that Owen Larkin. Then you had the Colin Finley. They had Richie Power. They always had a big man on the edge of the square. Very seldom they ever put a small man to the edge of the square, and they used to often work off the breaks. And I remember, just to give you one particular example, Dave, I remember Kilkenny played Cork in an All-Ireland final, and they hit a route 1 into the full forward line, so they did, and the ball broke straight to Taggy Fogarty. He was on your man Mulcahy, and he drove the ball to the roof of the net off his left-hand side. So he did. And I also remember another goal Kilkenny scored, which Henry Shefflin won the high ball on Lucy against Limerick, where the ball broke and he put it into the roof of the net. So it's a simple tactic, but it can be so effective. And it also, what it does as well, Colm, is it takes, if there's a spare man over it, it just completely takes him out of the game.
Yeah.
The spare man could be in front, but he has no role in that game plan.
I always find there's an element of luck to it. Now, I know Johnny Glynn is so good, but like that breaking ball, like, I mean, For example, against Wexford, Johnny Glynn broke the ball and Conor Cooney seemed to get every single one of them. And the other day, the lads... Now, obviously, Johnny Glynn is good at directing them and you would have played a lot like that.
Yeah.
Is that something that the full forward is doing, breaking it left and right or down in front? Or how is that in your team's advantage? You know what I mean? To get in there. Because you often hear sometimes as well, oh, the backs will just knock it down and they'll get down on that ball. Or Killian Buckley, theoretically, should be dropping back and mopping that up.
If he is within running distance, he can make it back. But I'm presuming now Galway or whoever is going to use his tactics are working a lot of this in training. And you have, if you're 13, you go in the front, you're 15, you go in the back. So if it breaks either side, a Galway player should be there, or whoever's going to implement that tactic should be there as well, because you let one guy up. But as a tactic like that, the full forward knows what you're doing, but the full back line don't. And you see with the first goal, well, Paul Murphy went up and catch it and Parry was at the wrong side of it. But ball broke and then it broke down to Johnny Glynn. He turned two Guinea full back and were out of position. Yeah. Couldn't do anything about it, you know.
There's an element of luck to that though, wasn't there?
There is,
the way
but then you make your own luck there as well. Yeah. Like, you know, because if you're patient enough, and that's what Damien said, if you're patient enough to stay in there and kind of, you know where the danger area is, 9 to 10, if you do win that first primary possession, or if you break it down, like, forwards will always be quicker on the break there as well, whereas backs, you're hoping now it'll come your way more than anything, you know what I mean. So backs will always try and win the primary possession, try and catch the ball in the air or flick it down to themselves. But if they don't and the full forward wins it, you're always wondering where your man is. You have to keep your eye on your man and where the ball goes, so it's very, very hard to keep your eye on both of them. You're hoping now it does break your way. If it breaks your way, all well and good, you're on the attack then straight away as well. But if you're look behind you and your forward is gone left and you're gone right and the ball breaks left, there's nothing you can do. Whereas the forward can just focus on the ball, he doesn't have to focus on the cornerback. He can let him go. If he gets it, he gets it. If not, I was in a great position, I was unlucky, I'll stay going at it. You see, like goal scorer in the soccer, he'll always make them runs, get into them positions, and the ball does break. I don't think that's luck either, because if you do it long enough, you're going to get a look. Damien will probably tell you a lot more than what I would. He was brilliant at it. He was always there. There's no coincidence that the likes himself, like Henry Sheffield, where the ball wasn't finding them, they were in them positions because they make them runs as well. Like,
yeah, is that it, Damien? So, like, I mean, you're trying to read where it's going to go, or you have a pre-plan?
You have to try read where the ball is going to go. And look at, sometimes it's going to happen when, just to give an example, a high ball is coming on top of Johnny Glynn, right? And we'll just say Whelan is running for it, and Johnny Glynn will get a hurl to it, and it'll break the wrong side, right? Okay, that happens, right? But you've got to stay making them runs, and at some stage the ball is going to break the right side, and that's it. And look, that's your game as a corner forward, right? That's your game, to get in onto them breaks. You use your speed, right? And you use your speed and you try work the first touch to get scored. And look, that's what you're training for, Colin. You're doing all these running during the winter, and you're doing all these, right? And there's different types of runs. The corner forwards run is to run in front of the goals to make them sprints, to make the breaks. It's like the midfielders are making runs. Their runs are maybe to run back into the full back line to get. And you're doing all that running for days like that. So yeah, they call it the lost cause. So sometimes the ball is going to break, and it'll break absolutely. Do you know who was brilliant at that? Was Larry Corbett. Simple as that. He used to always be running in, and the secret is too, Colin, right? If you are making that run, always try to be running towards the goal. So if the ball breaks, that if you latch onto it, you're latching onto it with first touch, and your face, your whole body is facing the goals with the black spot.
Right.
It's
so you'll
not to be face is not.
You'll run out.
Running towards.
Will you run out and loop back around then?
Yeah, exactly. You can do that. You can sort of, you run out, but even if you're running in, if you're running at an angle. Right, if you're running at an angle, then if just as the ball happens to break, that you're running, that your first touch, you get to it, right? But your face and your body is looking at the goals, as opposed to your back towards the goals.
Yeah.
Right? And that's, you know, but look, it's easy to talk about. It doesn't always work as simple as that, but that's just the theory behind it.
Yeah,
you know?
Just like, I mean, it's gas, because, like, I mean, it's so simple. You can serve so much energy by letting the ball go do the work so much in comparison.
Well,
maybe
well,
to
Colin, I'll give you another example just to try explain my point, right? TJ Reid's first point, high ball came down among Pádraig Mannion and his man, right? And the ball broke to the left, and TJ was running at that angle. The ball broke, he latched onto it with his left hand straight over the bar. He hadn't to break momentum. That's basically what I'm trying to explain, if I'm trying to explain the theory of the right. So it's the same purpose if it broke in front of goals. that you're latching onto without breaking momentum and maybe putting the ball in the back of the net.
Right, okay. So you must be shitting it then, JJ, when these balls are raining down, because like it's there's no, like I was always terrible at breaking ball. I was never seemed to be in the right place at the right time. But like there's some lads have a knack for it. And it's like, how is he doing that?
Yeah.
How is he always on the breaks? And I'm in there and I'm looking and I can't get on them. But like, I mean, it's just I don't. It's hard to describe, obviously, why I was so shit at it and someone else was good at it. So I presume if you were marking Lark Horbridge, you might be like, here's a big one. Do you man mark him as he runs in for the break, or what do you do?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. Like, you can't just do one thing all the time either, like, because if he does the one thing all the time, he's going to cop on to it and then he's going to do something else, like, you know. So what you're trying to do is trying to, before the ball goes in, you're trying to get your hands on him, where he is, feel where he is. If he's in a couple of yards from you, that's okay. Ball breaks either side, it's a 50-50 battle. When you can't feel him or you can't see him, that's when the problem starts. That's when you have to decide, do I go up and try and compete for the ball itself, or do I just go back away here now and I'll go and mark my man
right
again?
And as fullback, you nearly have to compete for that. That's your job.
You have
you're
to compete
good in the
for
air.
Yeah, yeah. You'd be hoping now the two corner backs now will stay down out of your way, really, and then you can attack that ball as well. But if they're going up or forward and you see danger, you have to kind of commit, filter over and pick up someone else's man running through, or your own man is going for the break there as well. So you can't just do one thing. You kind of have to, if he's beside you, hold on to him there as much as you can, and then at least you know where he is. But if he's not there, then you have to go and find where he is fairly quick, because if the ball breaks and he's gone, if he gets the ball in his hand, it's going to be a goal. Literally, because all them situations would be you're in with a 14-yard box, and then if they get a shot at the goal, it's going to be a goal. Like,
yeah, exactly. And you see, often see with teams, there are different lines of the field all kind of talk amongst each other before the game. I presume the full-back line, that's what you're actually talking about. So you're telling them, high ball, I'm going up, you stay down.
You'd be shouting before the ball comes up, you're shouting, I'm up.
You're letting them know.
Yeah, or at least if you hear someone else going up or they're shouting, you let them up, like, you know.
Right. So Murphy and Walsh going up, that was a huge mess up by that, a miscommunication, really.
I mean, it's
a
miscommunication, but Paul is very unlucky now to kind of, he got the ball to hand, but it kind of fell out of his hand. And Donal Grady was on the Sunday game last night saying he should have batting it, but I don't see too many people batting the ball anymore. Dottie Burke down the other end, same thing happened. He caught it and he went out the field as well, because when you bat the ball, you're not in control where the ball goes. It could be the same if you don't get good connection, it's the same as the full forward lane breaking it down. You're not kind of way. So I wouldn't really agree with that. I thought he tried to do the right thing, because he done that the same thing on the week before, and he caught the ball and he burst out and drove the ball up the field. Small little fractions, and when it's going for you, you'd catch them balls. If it doesn't, then it doesn't go your way, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. Great, great stuff, lads. That's all very interesting stuff. We'll be back next with Paddy Power Performance of the Weekend.
After the match with with Marty Morrissey and the Marty squad, and you know, the big thing for me yesterday with Clare versus Galway was,
hang on, did you ask permission to do the Marty squad there?
Well, I didn't, but I was only a special guest. That Thursday, you asked me the same question when I started Bubbles, and I said it yesterday on the Marty squad, that yes, I would have started Bubbles for that game yesterday. That was the first I heard of Johnny King coming back with the Galway squad. You know, I was asked just in the Marty squad.
Here, Damien, are you getting paid for Marty squad plugs on our show here?
That's three.
Wait, no, I do that completely voluntarily.
He hits it! He hits it! It's over the bar! Oh! Holy Moses! What a match!
Move away from the messing there, lads, right? We have a serious show to do here, right?
All right, Paddy Power Performance of the Weekend. And we did a poll on Sports Joe, and I'll give you the results in a minute, because I'm going to go along with the winner today. The winner of the poll gets it. So the first nomination is Cathal Mannion, lads. I mean, this is a no-brainer, really. And this is a fella, like, I mean, he's so streaky, isn't he? When he's on it, he's on it. And we've seen it so many times. Yeah. Like, and I think it was 2015, Galway came through the qualifiers, and this lad was shooting the lights out.
Yeah.
Now, he didn't do too well in the final, but it was Deegan he roasted, wasn't it? Because it was Paul Murphy was on Whelan. And Murphy did really well in the second half on Whelan. He got a bit of a roasting in the first half. But Cathal Mannion was literally unmarkable for the whole game.
He was all over the field. I don't think he was set in one position for the whole game. He was just floating around, getting a loose ball, going very, very deep and coming off the field as well. But I liked him. He hit right, he scored off left. He was very, very comfortable on the ball. One time he just dropped his shoulder, flicked the ball off the ground, up in the hurl, then, and straight over the bar. He's a beautiful hurler.
That was the one, Damien. It was in the first half, and he faked a shoot, and instead of shooting, and you don't see enough of that dummying, I think, in hurling, he just left it on the hurl, then realised, well, I can't catch it again, and all in the within seconds of putting it on the hurl and doing the dummy, he's knocking it on the ground, and he didn't really need it because he was so close. It's almost like Damien, he was showing off. This is how good he is.
Well, he's a brilliant player and he's a brilliant stick player and he's unbelievable skill, right? But you're saying on the day he's unbelievable, right? Like in the last day he scored 3 points from play in Crow Park and he was taken off. And I'd say he was a little bit disappointed to be taken off, right? But I think he's way more dangerous for Galway in corner forward because it gives him more of a scoring sight. And see, he was playing wing forward for a lot of games, and what happens is, as we've spoken about, what the game plan is, your half forwards drop and you have to go back and help out the midfield and the half back line. And what was happening is Kyle Mannion was back nearly too defensive, too far back to field, and he was delivering ball all the way up into the full forward line. And realistically, he took Conor Cooney's place the last day. They went with him opposed to Conor Cooney at corner forward, and I think he's a better striker of a ball. And as he said, he's all the tricks. Like, he's able to strike the ball left and right. He scored 6 points yesterday. He scored 3 in Crow Park. That's 9 points in 2 games. The 2 corner forwards scored 10 points from play between them. And as he said, he was all over the pitch, but predominantly he was playing as a corner forward going in and out, and Deegan was marking him. And and that's my argument, Colin. I'm always saying this: Deegan was marking Cathal Mannion, and maybe JJ, you might speak about this, right? Would Deegan not have been better, especially in the first 10 minutes of the game, to go touch tight and maybe try to keep Mannion out of the game and not getting his hand on the ball, as opposed to hurling space and marking a corner of the field, then marking Cathal Mannion tight? Because it's like in hurling and in forwards, once you get a score on the board, it gives you confidence. And Mannion got the first score of the game from whatever, nearly midfield. And Deegan must have been 80, 100 yards in near the full back line. So maybe you talk about that, JJ. Would you not be better off to mark a man for the first 10 minutes and start winning the battle and maybe tell Mannion to go back in corner and see how it goes from there?
Yeah, I suppose that's the way Kilkenny set up in the full back line. They were kind of sitting back. I'd say the reason why they were sitting back was Galway went long all the time last year, or the last week in the draw match. They were going long, long, long. They weren't even looking. They were hitting the ball down. Skettle was going long. And that's where Paddy Deegan was trying to sweep across that. When the ball does land down, when they thought it was going to come long, he was going to be there and picking up the ball. But Cathal Mannion went up the field and they were actually picking him out very, very well as well. So, yeah, it's a tricky one, because if you go that far and the ball goes into that space and you're exposing your full back line there as well, and I'd say they went with the same route, same tactic as they went with the week before, in keeping the full back line and half back line very, very tight. But unfortunately, Galway played around that half back line, and when Cathal Mannion got broke through that line, he was getting an easy shot at the goal, like, you know. So I'd say it was an instruction there from the management team that, look, if it does go up the field, hold back and we'll defend the goal. But unfortunately, after the first 10 minutes, Johnny Glynn got the goal and all that went out the window as well. So it kind of backfired on both ways. And he could have went up and went man to man on Cathal Mannion, but they didn't. Because they wanted to stop conceding goals. Yeah, but that was well
before that stage, now before they got the goal on Johnny Glynn's goal. But it'll be interesting to see what Kilkenny do the next day, because, like, if you wanted to beat Kilkenny, if you were the Limerick management, wouldn't you sit down and watch the way Galway hurled against them, particularly in the first 20 minutes? So I'm very interested to see how Kilkenny will line up and how they will play against Limerick the next day, because people are saying Limerick are playing very similar to the way Galway are playing, you know, with big men and dropping back. And you have to, and I'll be the first one to say, Galway have mirrored the way they're playing over the way Kilkenny have played over the years.
Yeah.
So it'll just be interesting to see what Kilkenny will do if the exact same tactic happens next Saturday or next Sunday. Will they do the same thing, or will they push up on their men? My own opinion is you should push up on your man for the first 10-15 minutes, and then if changes have to be made, it should be made. But you're accountable for your own man, and Cathal Mannion got well on top of that game. I had 3 points scored in the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, I'm not an expert, but you should push up on Cathal Mannion anyways. Like, I mean, sure, he just nonchalantly
there's certain players that you have to be touch tight on. Simple. And I'll give you an example. There wasn't too many stages, and I know TJ Reid is a brilliant player, right? But there wasn't too many stages that TJ Reid was left on his own for, you know, of 10 yards during that game, and that would be what Galway would be good at. Galway would be very good at man marking. And for example, when Richie Hogan was getting well on top of Gearóid McInerney, what did Galway do? They pinpointed straight away Pádraig
Aidan Hart.
Pádraig Mannion straight in on top.
Pádraig Mannion, yeah. That was a great.
That was a smart move.
Yeah,
but all I'm saying is, I would just love to know, will Kilkenny go touch tight? It's a grand mind in the full back line. And I know, Jade, you were a full back, and you'll probably disagree with me to the extent, and you'll be telling lads to pull back. But I just think at the start of games, you should push up your own man and win your own battle. And it's like that, and the longer your man doesn't touch the ball, the management on the sideline are going, he hasn't touched the ball, and the statsmen, the next thing they're warming up, lads.
Well, I do have to say, there are a few players that, in football, that I've come across, and they're lazy about marking their man, so they try to act like they're covering space and they're doing this real clever job, whereas they actually won't just get up and mark a bloody man, you know what I mean? They're trying to act a bit too clever. You know, I don't know, I'm not accusing Deegan of that, but like, I mean, it makes no sense why you wouldn't mark Cathal Mannion. But an interesting one, Damien, and you're right, it was Cathal Mannion that was given the unenviable job of marking Declan O'Keefe against Wexford, and he was running up and down the wing with him the whole day, you know what I mean? So maybe this new role is the right role for him. Aaron Galan came back yesterday for Limerick. He scored 1-6. Now, I know I don't want to start picking out forwards who scored 1-6 out of, you know, the total that they got. It was, they shot the lights out, 5-22. But, like, I mean, he was dropped for the Clare game at the end. He served a suspension, but he was their main man, their talisman throughout the league. And by all, well, he scored a screamer of a goal. But I know it's hard to read into it, but it's more the point that Aaron Galan is back. Shane Dowland's an option off the bench. Peter Casey was back yesterday, and we saw how good he was for Napiershig, especially in the Croke Park game in the All-Ireland final. So, like, I mean, Limerick definitely have options. Is Peter Casey a possible starter?
It could be now, yeah, but I don't think he will start. I'd say he'll come on, you know. I think Aaron Galan back is, I think the whole formation they play, Aaron Galan is the focal point, is the out ball there from the half back line for the midfielder, poke the ball in, because he's very good in the air. For he's not overly tall, he's Johnny Glynn size, but he is good in the air, and he's well able to look after himself as well. So I think he's the focal point of the inside forward that might win the own ball. And Graham Mulcahy got a goal off of just Aaron Glenn winning the ball and hand passing it off, and he took two opportunities to finish it, but he did finish it, you know. So I think he plays better with Aaron Glenn in there with him. So you'd hope he'd just learn his lesson from what he did in Páirc Uí Chaoimh that day, and it won't happen again. But I think he's just, as a kind of a tactic, as what they use him as an out ball and the high ball in. So I think he will definitely be playing. He'll be the main guy up there as well.
Yeah, looks like that's going to be the case. Aidan Nolan is another one here, lads. He scored 4 from play against Westmead, and by all accounts, he was absolutely outstanding right throughout the game. Liam O'McGovern, we were talking about him last week. He got on after 43 minutes. And Rory O'Connor, he didn't start, and we were talking about that on Thursday as well. So, like, I mean, Wexford are looking good in that they can kind of rest. Lee Chin came off, you know, Morris came off, Liam O'McGovern got a run, you know, Aidan Nolan, as we mentioned, Rory O'Connor got rested, Aidan Nolan got 4 from play. Like, Wexford are in a decent place now, Damien.
Oh, they are in a very decent place, and I do think sometimes that this is the fixture, this is the game that Davy Fitz always wanted. He wanted a battle, so he does, with Clare, you know. And it's kind of like, once they got beaten by Kilkenny, it was nearly like this game was always going to happen if things fell in place, which they have. And this is going to be a massive, like, the whole media are going to, circus is going to start now. It's going to be Clare versus Davies Wexford, you know, and it's going to go on. But, like, I thought that Clare would push on and maybe win the Munster Championship, and I still feel they should have, but they completely turned off and switched off in the second half. But this is going to be actually a very good game. I actually think the two quarter finals are going to be two very good games. We don't know where they're going to be played yet, whether they're going to be double headers or not, but it's both teams are playing very, very similar. But it's just going to be maybe down to what Clare do. We all know that Wexford are playing a sweeper, so it's going to be a case of maybe a game plan again, but it's going to be a very good game. And Wexford, why wouldn't they beat Clare? And they're well possible, they're in a very good position, and he's building a panel, and he's done a great job down there. There's no point saying he hasn't. He's done a great job down there, and but I still think Clare should have enough to beat Wexford. They should be beating Wexford, but that's not saying that they will beat Wexford.
Yeah, no, that's probably right. Davy wouldn't say anything about Clare, JJ. He said, if I say anything, I'll be accused of mind games or there'll be something. So I'm not saying, I won't say anything. I'll have to get Connor sketches.
Wait till after the match, you know, he'll say a lot, won't he?
So he wouldn't say, oh yeah, but this, like, let's call a spade here. This is the revenge mission that Davy wanted. Like, Davy, like, I imagine, was hurt the way he finished up with Clare, even though he never admitted it. But, like, I mean, the players said they wanted a change. Now, he accepted it with grace and the way it should have been. But imagine privately he would have been very disappointed. Took on Wexford. Mm. And this is what he maybe
and
took
the Wexford
on Wexford
supporters
first.
Will get behind Davy Fitz, no problem whatsoever. Yeah. And even more now that they're playing his home county as well, they'll actually just travel in numbers now for this game as well, because especially after the under 21 game during the week, they're unlucky to lose it, but they show how they're competing at the top level there as well, so they want to stay doing that. And if they get to a semi-final, they'll be mad to get back to Croke Park and win a semi-final again. But yeah, Davy, I'd say he'll leave no stone unturned now this week now to get the boys revved up now.
Oh, I'm sure he will. They'll be eating raw, they'll be eating the bull nuts, I'd say, Damien, maybe. The other one is David Burke, obviously, and we talked enough about David Burke. He did maybe a first half of the greatest half you might see from a midfielder, that he was on so much ball. He was just unbelievable. A little bit quieter in the second half as the Kilkenny midfield came into it.
But exactly, as a sweeper in the first half. He was there for the get-out ball for the half-back line and just launch it up the field as fast as possible.
Yeah.
Great performance. Great performance,
especially after the criticism that he kind of got last week, that he wasn't brilliant. Right, but the results of the poll, and I'm going along with the results of the poll, Cathal Mannion will be glad to hear, because he's won it by a landslide, 57% of the vote. Aidan Nolan's on 8, Aaron Galland's on 12. Now, that could be affected by the fact that we didn't really see much of those games. David Burke on 23. So Cathal Mannion, and we've got our Paddy Power boxers in stock. We have them in the office here. So we're going to go back through the performers of the weekend since Paddy Power took over, and you're all going to get the pair of Paddy Power boxers sorted. So listen, that's all we've time for this week, and we'll be back on Thursday with a review show. So good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.